Welcome. It's Tuned to Yesterday, delivering programs from radio's golden era to your theater of the mind. I'm your host, Mark Levenier, for this hour of radio drama. Later on, you'll hear an episode of Romance with John Daner. And right now, it's The Life of Louis Pasteur, adapted on the Encore Theater. With George Zucco, Paul Lucas, and Lorraine Tuttle, this June 11th, 1946 broadcast, first heard on CBS.
The Shenley Laboratories, producers of penicillin Shenley and Shenley Pharmaceuticals, presents the Encore Theater. The Encore Theater play tonight, The Life of Louis Pasteur. Our star is Paul Lucas.
You cannot begin to tell the story of Louis Pasteur without telling many stories. For his story must be told in terms of human lives and human progress. His own lifetime is not even so much his story as the story of an era in medicine and of people marked for death who lived because of him. Who was he? What was he? Well, first and last, he was a chemist. A chemist and a fighter. And never a very tactful one. Take that matter of the pamphlets he had distributed all over Paris.
Louis, a copy of your pamphlet just arrived.
Oh, good. Let me see it. Doctors, surgeons, wash your hands, boil your instruments. Microbes cause disease. Did they say whether they have started distributing these?
They said that by nightfall there would be a copy at every home in Paris.
Well, then by nightfall, my dear, we are sure to be in trouble in a good many homes in Paris. Even, I suspect, in the palace of the emperor.
Yes, the story of Louis Pasteur is the story of many people. It is certainly the story of Monsieur Charbonnet, advisor on health matters to Napoleon III. Charbonnet, a man who hated Louis Pasteur. The pamphlets afforded Charbonnet a rare opportunity.
Your Majesty, look at these pamphlets. This man isn't even a doctor. He's a chemist.
Oh, yes, I recall. He claimed to have found little animals in sour wine.
Yes, Your Grace. By heating wine to a certain temperature, Monsieur Pasteur was able to destroy them. I presume he plans to cure blood poisoning by boiling our blood.
Heaven forbid. I won't tolerate such practices, Charbonnet.
Of course not. Why, if doctors were to do anything so absurd as to boil instruments or scrub their hands, they'd be laughed out of the hospital.
Ask Pasteur to come to court, Monsieur Charbonnet. We will put an end to this nonsense. Monsieur Pasteur?
Yes, Your Majesty.
Monsieur Pasteur, in the preservation of the wine industry, you have been of service to France. It is my command that in the future you confine your work to that field.
But, sire, what are the pamphlets he's already written?
For that, monsieur, you will publish an immediate retraction or suffer my displeasure.
Oh, what happened, Louis?
You'll have to pack, Mary. We are leaving Paris tomorrow.
Yes, Louis.
They want me to apologize for the pamphlet.
Oh, no.
But I won't. I won't take back what I know is true. I'll die first.
Oh, don't worry, my dear. Someday you'll prove you're right. Where are we going, Louis?
To Arbois. We may have to spend many years in Arbois.
The story of Louis Pasteur is the story of the sheepherders and cattlemen of Arbois, in whose cause he spent the next few years. And because of those years, his story also is the story of the first president of France.
This is the first president of the new Republic of France, President Louis Adolphe Thiers.
Gentlemen of the cabinet, you are aware of the conditions upon which Bismarck has consented to withdraw the German armies from France. In addition to forfeiting Alsace-Lorraine, we have to pay an immediate indemnity of 5 billion francs. Monsieur Charbonnet, you are chairman of the Agricultural Board. How do you suggest we raise the money?
Your Excellency, I hardly know what to say. Industry is at a standstill. Farms are being neglected. A devastating plague is destroying our cattle everywhere except in one small province. The district of Arbois.
Why is there no plague in Arbois?
I don't know, Your Excellency.
You don't know? As chairman of the Agricultural Board, you should have investigated. Monsieur Charbonnet, you and your assistant, Dr. Martel, will kindly leave for Arbois immediately.
Yes?
I beg your pardon. We were sent to Arbois to discover why your sheep have escaped the plague. We were directed here by a neighbor who told us his sheep have been treated by someone who...
Oh, you're quite welcome. I'm sure Father will be delighted to see you, Monsieur. My name is Annette Pasteur.
Pasteur? That chemist again?
So, Monsieur Charbonnet, we meet again.
This is Dr. Martel, Father.
How do you do? Won't you come in? Our quarters are very humble, but you are most welcome.
Thank you.
So, you're now the savior of sheep, Monsieur. Well, suppose you tell us about their microbes.
I'll be glad to. We are convinced after 8 years of experimenting that we have discovered a vaccine which, when injected into the animal, will set up an immunity.
Oh, ridiculous. It'll take 80 years to convince me.
Yes. I am sure it would.
Well, I've heard enough. Are you coming, Dr. Martel?
No, Monsieur Charbonnet. I'm going to stay.
You do as you please, but I'm going back and make a report to the cabinet. With you or without you?
I'll make no report without an investigation first.
And so Dr. Jean Martel met Annette Pasteur and her illustrious father. And his life became part of the story of Louis Pasteur. He stayed several days trying to grasp Pasteur's theories.
Here. Now, look at this slide under the microscope. You see, it reveals a number of dormant germs, or spores as we call them, which are found in the grass and soil wherever diseased animals have been buried. Now, our healthy stock eat the grass, they become infected and die. The germs become spores again, and the cycle starts all over again.
And you say these spores are present even here in the pastures at Arbois?
Oh, yes. For an animal that hasn't been vaccinated, Arbois is one of the worst areas in all of France.
Sorry to disturb you, but the newspaper just came, and there's a proclamation in it.
Well, let's see.
No, anthrax at Arbois. What in the name of heaven are they talking about?
Government to appropriate huge areas for grazing. Charbonnet urges farmers to bring healthy sheep to Arbois free of charge.
They die, all of them. The fields are reeking with contagion. Even if they let me, I couldn't inoculate them all. It would take weeks to make the vaccine. But is there anyone we can appeal to?
Yes, there is, but it won't be easy. I can call a meeting of the Academy of Medicine and tell them about your discoveries.
Would you do that?
Of course, it's the only thing we can do.
They came from all over France to hear about anthrax. The great medical men gathered on the floor of the auditorium. And in the gallery, the people sat to listen. Farmers, sheep herders, cattle raisers. And in their midst sat the small, humble figure of Louis Pasteur, listening to Dr. Martel.
I tell you, I've seen with my own eyes what Pasteur has done for the cattle and sheep of Arbois. We, on the other hand, members of the Academy of Medicine, have contributed nothing in the fight against anthrax. Then why, in heaven's name, don't we listen to a man who has?
Dr. Martel.
Yes, Monsieur Charbonnet?
Monsieur Pasteur was discovered to be a charlatan 10 years ago when he made a ludicrous claim concerning the cause of childbed fever, which he was never able to prove. Consequently, I see no reason for humoring him further.
I disagree. If someone's got a cure for anthrax, I want to know about it.
Yes, so do I.
Very well. In that case, I propose an experiment. Let us take 50 normal, healthy sheep, 25 of which will be vaccinated by Monsieur Pasteur. The other 25 will remain as they are. I shall then infect all 50 sheep with anthrax. And I defy any man or any vaccine to save one of them. Well, Dr. Martel?
Well, I... I can't take it upon myself.
I defy him to try.
Messieurs, I accept.
You have treated all 25 of those sheep?
I have, Monsieur Charbonnet.
I am now at liberty to inject into their veins the blood of an animal that has died of anthrax?
Proceed by all means, Monsieur Charbonnet.
Monsieur Pasteur, I am from the London Times. Would you care to make a statement?
The sheep that have not been treated by me will die within 48 hours.
The others won't even be ill, I suppose.
At least let us hope they won't. For the sake of France.
The story of Louis Pasteur is, too, the story of the people he loved. The story of Annette and of Jean Martel.
You're very quiet, Annette. What are you thinking?
Oh, all sorts of things. I was thinking about Father. Praying a little, I guess. This experiment is so important to him. And I was thinking about Mother and how good she is. And a little about you and how good you are. What were you thinking? You've been very quiet yourself.
I was thinking about you. I was thinking that you're very beautiful and very good, very understanding, and that the man you accept for a husband will be the most fortunate man that ever walked this earth. And then I started thinking, if I were that man, and then I was completely lost.
If I were to accept a husband, it would have to be someone very much like you. And if you don't ask me, I don't know where on earth I'll find one.
Annette. Annette, my darling.
Mrs. Pasteur, have you any idea what's going on in your garden?
No, and you come away from that window immediately.
Your daughter is being kissed.
Oh, she's your daughter too, Louis.
Not when she's being kissed, and she's all her mother's. Oh, how good it must be to be as young as that.
How good it is to be as old as this. Louis, do you realize what this means? Tomorrow, if you're successful, every farm in Europe will want your vaccine. You won't have a moment's peace, day or night.
Marie, the benefits of science are not for scientists. They are for humanity.
Mother! Father! Sean and I have something to tell you.
With your permission, we want to be married, sir.
Well, I should think so.
Yes, the story of Louis Pasteur is of his loved ones, Marie and Annette and Jean and the others. It is also the story of 50 sheep, 25 live ones, and 25 dead. The story of Louis Pasteur is the story of the great Dr. Lister, who traveled from Edinburgh to observe his experiment. They met, shook hands that day, two men who are making history.
Monsieur Pasteur, you are making the entire world microbe conscious. I foresee marvelous benefits, especially in the field of surgery.
The honor is mine, Doctor. I'm well acquainted with the work you are doing on antiseptics.
Thanks to you and your brilliant leadership. Today marks a definite turning point in the world of science. You can no longer be classified merely as a chemist. You are an inspired benefactor to all mankind.
Yes, the story is of many people. Supporter and opponent, friend and enemy, man and animal. The story is part of the lives of millions who never knew him. Of those who survived operations because of sterile instruments. Of those who survived deadly diseases. Because of his knowledge of the microbe.
Louis, Louis, what is going on in the laboratory? And why is that dog howling?
Now, Maria, don't get yourself all upset. There's nothing to be so concerned about.
Louis, you're not working with... Oh, Louis, no. Not hydrophobia.
Well, I suppose you may as well know. I've been trying to discover a cure for months. I pledged myself to wipe it from the earth.
And the story is part of the life of the Russian doctor Zaranov, who defied Pasteur's old enemy, Charbonnet, on the floor of the Academy of Medicine.
I came here commissioned by my government to investigate Pasteur's efforts. My people have for centuries been preyed upon by rabid wolves. And, messieurs, I would worship, I would kneel to any man who could point the way to a cure. How do we know bacteria are not harmful? How dare we say they do not do the deadly work that Pasteur claims?
We invited Pasteur to attend this meeting. He ignored the invitation.
Monsieur Charbonnet, if Pasteur is unwilling to come to us, then let us go to Pasteur.
Go to Pasteur?
Humility, monsieur, is a virtue not only in those who suffer, but in those who hope to heal.
Well, gentlemen.
It's fortunate we found you in, monsieur. It is the wish of some here that the Academy of Medicine honor you with the committee visit. Dr. Zaranoff has been reading your recent statements in the journal promising a cure for rabies.
Dr. Zaranoff, as usual, the press take liberties. I said only that I was on the threshold of a vast new world.
I understand.
May one inquire when you intend to cross that threshold?
Monsieur Charbonnet, science takes a step, then another. Then it stops and reflects before taking a third. Step by step, I am reaching the ultimate conclusion that all diseases are caused by microbes.
Oh, Pasteur.
You don't believe me, Charbonnet. Look at this vial. In my hands, I hold enough rabies virus to wipe out the city.
Let me see that.
Now, be careful. Don't uncork it.
Why?
If you have the tiniest scratch on your hand...
Oh, really? Well, let me make a scratch. I have a penknife.
Charbonnet, don't be a fool.
There. Is that deep enough?
Give me that vial.
Oh, no. Now I'll just rub this virus into the cut.
Charbonnet! You fool!
There. Now, Monsieur Pasteur, all I want is for you to predict the hour of my death.
I came to see Monsieur Pasteur because I wanted to warn you about Charbonnet. For weeks now, he's been parading up and down the boulevards, making a great show of the fact that he is alive and healthy. You can't afford to be made ridiculous. The work you are doing is too important.
I wish it were important, but it isn't. My results have all been negative.
You cannot find the microbe?
Not a sign of it. I'm completely baffled. Every animal that was vaccinated with the contents of the test tube died, except Charbonnet. For some reason, he was able to resist the disease. Why, I don't know.
Are you certain it was the same tube?
Positive. It was the only specimen I had.
Well, perhaps you let it stand too long. Perhaps the germs grew less virulent with age.
Oh, wait a minute. Wait a minute. That must be it. The germ was weak enough for the system to overcome. Come with me. I want to speak to my assistant. Tom.
Yes, Louis?
How old was the dry tissue when Charbonnet rubbed it into his arm?
14 days.
That must be it, Zaranoff. Now, suppose we start with a 14-day-old virus that's no longer deadly. Suppose we inject it into a healthy animal, and day by day, as nature builds up his resistance, we increase the doses with stronger, fresher samples until he is able to withstand the actual disease. Would he not be then immune?
No, it would never work. If the first injection did not kill him, the second would, or the third.
Now, where are those tubes you've been preparing, Jean?
Right behind you, sir. They're all in order. Each one is dated.
Here we are. 14 days. How many dogs have we left?
10.
Are they all well, healthy?
Perfect condition. They've never been exposed.
Inoculate them with a virus of hydrophobia.
And so the story of Louis Pasteur is the story of 10 dogs who became immune to hydrophobia in 14 days. And it is also the story of a German doctor and a little boy.
Oh, Monsieur Pasteur, I apologize for not giving you notice, but I've come all the way from Alsace with a child who has been bitten. He's outside in the carriage. Would you help him?
How long has it been, Dr. Pfeiffer?
11 days.
You cauterized the wounds?
Well, not right away. It must have been 24 hours.
I don't know what to say to you.
Oh, Monsieur, I implore you.
My treatment has saved dogs, yes, 10 of them. But I haven't the faintest notion what effect it would have upon a human being. If I failed, it would mean prison, perhaps the guillotine. I am not a doctor. There are rules and traditions governing these things.
This is a human life, Monsieur Pasteur. You may be able to save it. You alone in the entire world. I beg you to try.
He paced the floor late that night. Hour after hour he walked, while a child's life hung in the balance, and countless millions of other lives. dare he experiment with a human life? And yet, the life was doomed if he did not. He went up to the boy's room. He sat there watching, watching. In the distance, a dog's howling lashed the night and shivered through him. And at last he knew, whatever the consequences, he had to risk them. He rose and then went into the laboratory. And the Bunsen burner that he lit was like a beacon.
How is he, John?
He's improving all the time.
What is that?
I don't know. Shall I open it?
But of course.
Dr. Zaranoff.
Yes, Monsieur Pasteur.
Well, of course. Come in, Dr. Zaranoff.
I am sorry to intrude, but I just came from the Russian embassy. Those people outside are Mujiks, peasants. They have been bitten by rabid wolves. Their villagers have sent them to you.
They've heard so soon?
Monsieur Pasteur's cure of the boy is the talk of the continent.
But it isn't proved yet.
That's why they are here, to offer themselves for the test.
But Dr. Zaranoff, I'm a scientist. My treatment was intended for dogs. Vaccinate dogs and the disease will vanish. I only attempted the treatment with the boy because his case was desperate.
But these people are all desperate. Surely you won't refuse them the same opportunity.
Oh, my friend.
You are their only chance.
Very well. I will try. Jean, take them to the hospital. Isolate them. See that I get a full report on every case.
Thank you, monsieur. Thank you.
But we must have permission from the academy.
I will see that we get permission.
Patient number one, first treatment.
14-day-old virus.
Patient number seven, fourth day.
Any change?
Not this morning.
Continue treatment.
Patient number eight.
Let me see the report. 11-day virus.
The results are amazing, Pastor. Every single case improving. How proud you must be.
No. No, only grateful, Dr. Zaranoff.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, Louis. But Monsieur Charbonnet is waiting at your house.
Charbonnet?
Yes. He says he himself wants the Pasteur treatment for hydrophobia. Louis, Monsieur Charbonnet just told me that a foreign scientist is giving a lecture at the Academy this afternoon. He claims to have disproven your entire germ theory.
What? Who is he? What is his name?
His name is Lister.
Dr. Lister? Attacking me?
I'm afraid so.
Order a carriage.
He came in a side door, worried, almost in tears, for he loved and respected Lister. Charbonnet met him at the door, his eyes warm.
Come with me. They want you to sit on the platform.
They hurried down a side aisle and hesitated on the edge of the platform where Lister was standing. And a man came off the platform and offered him his arm. And that man was Louis-Adolphe Thiers, president of France. Stunned and completely unable to grasp what was happening, he took the president's arm and walked out on the stage. They stood up as he walked out on the platform. The members of the Academy of Medicine and the young medical students and all the people who had been able to crowd in, they stood up applauding and shouting their approval. And Louis Pasteur held out his arms to them, and the tears ran down his face.
Monsieur Pasteur, I greet you in the name of humanity.
Dr. Lister.
Monsieur Pasteur, on behalf of His Majesty the Tsar of Russia, with profoundest gratitude, I present you with the Diamond Cross of the Order of St. Ives.
I thank you. I have no words to express. You, young man, doctors and scientists of the future, do not let yourself be tainted by skepticism, nor discouraged by the sadness of certain hours that creep over nations. Do not become angry at your opponents, for no scientific theory has ever been accepted without opposition. Live in the serene peace of libraries and laboratories. Say to yourselves first, what have I done for instruction? Until the time comes when you may have the immense happiness of thinking that you have contributed in some way to the welfare and progress of all mankind.
moment, we'll bring back our star, Paul Lucas. But first, ladies and gentlemen, may we leave you with this thought. One of the most notable facts about the practice of medicine is that each succeeding discovery in the field has always become the property of all who devote themselves to the cause of healing. Shenley Laboratories pays tribute through this series of programs to this unselfish, progressive ideal. We of Shenley Laboratories feel that physicians everywhere may well take pride in a spirit of sharing for the greatest good of the greatest number. Now, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Lucas.
Friends, to sum up the spirit of the Shenley Laboratories program, this simple and beautiful prayer of the physician, written centuries ago by Maimonides, seems to me to be apt and fitting. The eternal providence has appointed me to watch over the life and death of all thy creatures. May I always see in the patient a fellow creature in pain, and grant me strength and opportunity always to extend the domain of my craft. This is the prayer of the physician. It is ages old, yet today it is as new as the hope for a peaceful way of life for all the world. And now, may we invite you to listen again next week at the same time when Shenley Laboratories presents Yellow Jack, starring Ronald Coleman, a great star in a great story. Good night.
The Life of Louis Pasteur, produced and directed by Bill Lawrence, is presented through the courtesy of Warner Brothers, who this year is celebrating the 20th anniversary of Sound Pictures. It was adapted for radio by Gene Holloway. Paul Lucas appeared through the courtesy of International Pictures, producers of The Stranger, soon to be released through RKO. This is Frank Graham speaking for Shenley Laboratories. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Classic radio drama from the Encore Theater with The Life of Louis Pasteur, their second episode in the short-lived series on CBS from June 11, 1946. You're listening to Tune 2 Yesterday, bringing you programs from radio's past. I'm Mark Levonier. And now it's Romance, their 60th show out of about 140 produced for the Columbia Broadcasting System. This episode heard on January 9, 1955, called Last Summer's Love.
Now, from Hollywood, Romance. Did you ever fall in love at a summer resort? Madly, wildly, devotedly in love? Well, you've missed something if you haven't. And if you have, then you'll know the summer magic that Candy and Doug share in our story. So now, with Joyce McCluskey as Candy and John Daner as Doug, we bring you transcribed Kathleen Height's delightful story, Last Summer's Love.
It just came in this morning's mail. Let me read it to you. Are you coming to Clear Lake again this year? We're holding the same accommodations for you you had last summer, because we're sure you'll want to recapture the thrill of boating on the lake, riding the wooded trails surrounding it, dancing at the pavilion, meeting the gang at the lodge. Everything you loved about Clear Lake is still here, waiting for you. I wonder if it is, because last year...
Candy, come out here this minute!
Don't you think it'd be better if I finished dressing first?
Oh, I don't think it matters. Hurry up, you'll just die.
Not on the first day of my vacation, I won't. I refuse to. Oh, Sue. Isn't it beautiful?
Beautiful?
I do believe it's bluer than it was on the brochure they sent us.
Oh, you're talking about the lake. Well, it's nice, too.
Too?
Over this way. Look.
Oh, the dock?
What's on the dock?
All I see is a couple of fellas with fishing poles getting out of a motorboat.
That's all you have to see. In fact, I didn't even waste time on the fishing poles and motorboat. Two fellas.
Well, what's the matter with you? Didn't you know they come in pairs or something?
Where'd you put the binoculars?
Don't be silly. You can tell from here that they're both tall. One of them has red hair. The other has light hair, and he's terribly tanned.
And those white trunks he's wearing. They're in the top drawer of the chest.
Huh?
The binoculars.
You know something wonderful?
Not yet.
That's our dock, too. Remember the man at the lodge said that there was a dock for every two cabins and each one had a canoe and a motorboat?
That's right, he did.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, now, look, Sue. Sure, you don't think we ought to go down there now.
Well, I mean, what on earth would they think?
We may have set a new track record down the trail to the dock. Maybe it was the mountain air or the high holiday mood of our vacation. Because, honestly, Sue and I aren't usually what you'd call forward. Generally speaking, we're much more subtle. For instance, the fact that I turned my ankle and sprawled headlong onto the dock was the purest of coincidences.
Oh, Candy, how awful. Are you hurt?
I don't know. It doesn't feel very good.
Hey, that looks like a bad one.
Can we give you a hand?
Oh, my goodness. And we had no idea anyone was within miles of us.
Well, you were running like someone was holding a clock on you. You always run that fast?
Only when we're after something special.
Wouldn't you like to get up?
I don't know. I was beginning to feel quite at home down here.
Oh, my goodness, Candy, are you still down there? I'd almost forgotten all about you.
Here, I'll help you up.
Oh, it sort of hurts. On this one ankle, my right one.
Just don't put any weight on it. Lean against me. That's right. Well, there you go.
Oh, thanks. Thanks very much.
Do you think you can stand on it?
Well, I can try.
You got a couple of skinned knees there, too.
I guess I do.
Oh, Candy, I'm so sorry.
Look, I better get these fish up on ice and take the rest of the gear up to the cabin. You look after the little lady, Doug.
I'll bring my stuff along later.
Why, you'll do no such thing. My goodness, if you're going to be kind enough to stay here and help Candy, the very least I can do is help him carry things.
You don't have to do that.
Yes, she does.
I want to. Really, I wouldn't feel right if I didn't.
She means that.
Well, okay, if you want to. That'll be swell. If you can manage the rods and Doug's sweatshirt, I'll handle the rest of the stuff.
Have you tried putting your weight on it yet?
Huh?
The ankle.
Oh, no. I guess I haven't. Let's see now.
Oh, hurts, huh? Oh,
just a little. A little shooting pain, you know.
Well, let's see now. Has that hurt?
Oh, just a little tender there.
How about that?
No, not especially.
Well, it isn't broken anyway.
Oh, that's nice.
I really think it's just twisted a little.
My, you're brown. I mean, you must have been up here a long time to get a tan like that.
This is about 10 days. I tan pretty easily. Poor old Brick, all he does is sunburn and peel. Brick's the one who went up to the cabin with your friend.
Sue.
Sue. She called you Candy.
Mm-hmm. He called you Doug.
You doing anything special tonight?
Well, no. Well, you see, we just got here today, and no, I'm not doing anything special.
Good. You soak that foot, then. Keep the water just as hot as you can stand it, and give it a good soaking, huh?
As I lurched up the trail to our cabin, quite alone, I told myself that I should be grateful for his concern, that it showed that he was a man of fine instincts, a man of feeling. I told myself a lot of things, but it was no use. I wasn't listening. For all I knew, Sue had moved in with Doug and Brick. I didn't see her again till late afternoon.
Candy, honey, I've simply been worried sick about you.
Ho, ho.
Really? I told the boys I couldn't stay another minute until I knew you were all right.
Bully for you.
We all think you're being terribly sensible.
You and the boys?
Mm-hmm. Staying off your feet this way. Candy, you're not the teeniest little bit disturbed with me, are you? I mean, we all thought you ought to rest.
Silly girl, of course I'm not the teeniest little bit disturbed. I am livid.
With me?
Well, not with you exactly. With me, I guess. I feel like a fool sprinting down that path with the speed of light landing on my chin.
You'll love what Doug said about it. Honestly, he's the funniest thing.
I'll bet I don't love it.
He said he'd never had a girl fall for him so hard. Isn't that a scream?
I'm completely convulsed.
Candy, you gotta help me.
Why?
Well, I don't know quite how it all happened, but the boys, Brick and Doug, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they were talking about how tired they are of eating just plain old fried trout every night, and I found myself saying that I knew the most perfectly divine sauce for trout. And then, of course, they said, well, why didn't I have dinner with them, fixing the sauce, of course, and I said I'd just run over here and gather up a few ingredients.
Well, go ahead. Gather them up.
Oh, Candy, you know very well I don't know the first thing about the most perfectly divine sauce for trout.
Oh? Don't you, Sue?
Outside of scalloped potatoes, I can't cook my hat. Candy, you will help me out, won't you? You know I'd do anything for you. I mean, if you were in over your head this way...
I gave her a sauce recipe. Now that I look back on it, I don't suppose it was really a very nice thing to do, but I wasn't feeling very nice that day. I myself dined alone on poached eggs, slept perfectly well the entire night. Even my ankle was much improved the next morning. And as I sat sunning myself on the dock, I reflected on the fact that there's a little of Lucretia Borgia in every woman. Oh, it can't be. Well, it couldn't possibly be.
Morning.
Hello.
How's that for a string of trout?
Oh, it's wonderful. Well, you must have gone out awfully early.
Yeah. I did. Felt kind of rocky all night. So I figured if I couldn't sleep, I might as well get up and fish.
Did you feel awfully bad?
Just rocky. I haven't checked Brick, but how's Sue feeling? We all ate the same thing.
I know. And I just feel terrible about it.
Well, you shouldn't. It wasn't your fault.
Oh, but it was. I don't know what came over me, but...
Well, you weren't even there.
Only in spirit.
How's the ankle feeling?
Oh, fine. It's really just fine.
You know, I sure admire what you did last night.
Huh?
Yeah. You stayed home and soaked your foot. That's what you should have done. A lot of gals would have been foolish about it, but you handled it just right.
You think so?
Makes me think a lot more of you.
I'm glad. But I don't deserve it. I mean, you're thinking nice things about me and all.
If you feel like it, I wish you'd have dinner with me tonight.
Dinner?
Yeah. Only we won't go to the same place we all went to last night.
But I thought... Didn't you fix the trout at your cabin with that special sauce?
Didn't Sue tell you? Well, I guess maybe she was mad at Brick and me, but she took so long with all those wild ingredients, we just told her to forget the sauce. Well, we all went down to Luigi's for spaghetti.
Return to romance and our story, Last Summer's Love, in just a moment. Today on CBS Radio's Gunsmoke, hear the remarkable story of Uncle Oliver. United States Marshal Matt Dillon meets Uncle Oliver today on most of these same stations. And now for the second act of Romance.
Funny. It wasn't the moonlight on Clear Lake or the romantic setting of the pine-capped mountains that brought Doug and me together. Just one twisted ankle and three light touches of ptomaine. Dinner that night was something I'll never forget. I don't think anything is more exciting than those first times together when you're beginning to fall in love.
I guess I should have told you not to dress up. Nobody does up here. Anything you wear fishing is fine for anything else you do.
I like that. Makes it more of a vacation, more of a change. You've been coming up here for a long time?
Ever since I was a kid. Used to come up with the folks then. When I got a little bit older, I'd take summer jobs up here just so I could spend the summers the way I liked it best.
What kind of job?
Oh, A little bit of everything. I worked for the stable several summers, gave riding lessons, and I'd take a crowd out along the trails for steak fries.
Sounds wonderful.
You like to ride?
Well, I like the idea of horseback riding. I really don't know much about it. Just once or twice at summer camp. I don't get much chance to ride in the city.
You don't get much chance to live either, or breathe, or get close to anything that's important. I don't like cities.
Don't you live in one?
Not for very long at a time. I'll take a job anywhere, so long as I can be out of doors.
I don't think I've ever met anyone just like you. I mean, most of the fellas I meet and the ones I grew up with, they're all in insurance or brokerage houses or maybe law firms.
Yeah, the Sunday golf crowd. I know.
Handball, too, on their lunch hours.
Yeah. Well, they can have it.
They surely can. I don't know why I'm talking so big. I work in an insurance office.
Well, it's different for a girl. You're probably just working to fill in the time until you get married.
I probably am.
There's nothing wrong with that, Candy.
Filling in the time or getting married?
Well, I was thinking more about filling in the time, but well, I guess there's nothing wrong with getting married.
A lot of people do.
Yeah. A lot of people I know are married.
Some of my best friends are.
Candy, would you let me teach you to ride?
It wasn't the most important question anyone had ever asked me, but it sounded like it at the time. All the time we were talking, and it certainly wasn't a very inspired conversation. I kept thinking what a wonderful-looking person he was. His plaid shirt open at the throat, his well-weathered Levi's. Everything about him was fresh and clean and crisp. He looked like a John Whitcomb drawing of a bronze, blue-eyed, typical American young man. The kind you never see. But there he was. Doug taught me to ride and fish, and we swam and went on long hikes. And just when I thought it could never end, it had to.
This is it, Candy. This is the spot.
Oh, I thought we were lost. You left the trail way back there.
Oh, I don't need any trail to come up here. Come on. I want to show you. There.
Oh, it's high, isn't it? Oh, it must be the top of the world.
The top of mine, anyway. Come on, out to the point.
Oh, Doc. It's... There aren't any words for it.
I've never found any.
It's like... Nothing down there was important.
Nothing is.
Is that the lake? That tiny thimble full of water?
You can't even see the lodge or the villages. They're too small.
How long have you been coming up here?
I don't know. I was about 10, I guess, first time I found it. That time I was lost. After that, it just sort of became my spot.
Why do you ever leave?
Sometimes I think I won't. Then I'm afraid if I stay too long, it'll just lose something for me. I like it just the way it is.
I think I understand.
Candy, I don't know if it matters. I've never brought anyone up here before.
It matters.
Funny, I didn't intend to bring you. I mean, I didn't even think about it till we started to ride this morning. Pretty soon, I knew where I was headed.
I hope you're not sorry. I hope you don't think of me as an intruder.
It seems just right, your being here. Candy. Candy.
It seems just right to me, too.
Let's not go back.
Back?
Brick and Sue, they were talking about a picnic tonight and then going over to the pavilion to dance.
Well, that's right. They were. Big farewell evening.
I don't like farewells. I don't want to think about tomorrow when you go. I just want to be with you today. Here.
And he was. And I'm quite sure there was never a day like it. Doug had brought food. We'd planned to have lunch and swim on the far side of the lake, but we settled for cold baked beans and beer, and sunning ourselves on the warm rocks of the point. And we never once talked of goodbye or anything beyond our day together until late that night at the door of the cabin.
You must be tired. I guess it's pretty late.
I'm not tired, and I don't care how late it is. Do you want to come in for a while?
No. There's no sense stretching it out, Candy. Won't make it any easier.
Just longer. I wish it were all just beginning, Doug. I wish tomorrow was the first day of my vacation.
Yeah. Well, I guess you gotta go, though. No chance of staying on a while?
No. I don't suppose you ever get to Kansas City.
Never have yet. Now, maybe. Look, I'll write you, huh? You send me your address, and I'll write you.
Doug, wait.
I'll see you, Candy.
I cried a little. Neither Sue nor I said anything much on the way home early the next day. Back in Kansas City, I saw the fellas I knew in the insurance and brokerage houses and law firms. And they talked about their Sunday golf games and handball on their lunch hours. I wrote letters to Doug and waited frantically for the mail. And the time passed. It was September and October. Mr. Beamer's office.
I'd like to speak to Miss Candy Winters, please.
This is she.
Oh, I thought so. Hi.
Doug?
Yeah.
But where are you?
Downstairs.
But you never come to Kansas City.
I'm here now. Look, are you busy for lunch?
No. I can leave early. I can come now, Doug.
I'm just downstairs.
Don't move a muscle.
How do you manage to keep looking so tan? I thought you'd be all faded out by now.
Well, I play golf on Sundays.
Oh.
It's really been quite a nice fall here. Warm and sunny. Doug, have you been sick?
No, I've been feeling fine.
But you're so pale. Maybe it's just the lighting in here.
I guess I've lost a lot of my tan, all right. I always do in the winter.
I just thought you were always terribly tan.
Not in the winter.
No. Well, most people aren't.
No. Not most people. Well, you're wearing a suit.
Yes. Yes, I am. I usually wear suits to the office.
It's nice. I just never saw you anything like that before.
No, well, the lake, it was different.
Yeah, it was.
You're wearing a suit, too.
Yeah, I am.
Is that a hand-painted necktie?
Yeah, it is. Cost $15. You like it?
Well, it's certainly colorful. Say that for it. Oh, what do you hear from Brick?
Oh, not much. He's stuck in San Francisco, some dull advertising job. How about Sue?
Well, she's fine. What brings you to Kansas City anyway?
Well, my work, really. I'm selling encyclopedias now.
Sounds interesting.
Well, it's outdoor work, you know. That is, I'm out more than I am indoors. You have a set of encyclopedias?
Oh, yes. Yes, 24 of them.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my goodness, look at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot. I'm supposed to be back for some terribly important dictation exactly of 3 minutes.
Oh, hey, then. You run along because, tell you the truth, I've got an appointment, too.
Well, it's been awfully nice, Doug.
Yeah, same here. Sure, it is great to see you again.
And if you're ever passing through town again...
You bet. I sure will.
Romance is produced and directed by Norman MacDonald with editorial supervision by Het Mannheim. You have heard Last Summer's Love, specially written for Romance by Kathleen Height, starring Joyce McCluskey with John Daner. Featured in the cast were Gene Bates and Vic Perrin. This is Joe Walters inviting you to hear Romance, transcribed next week at this same time. When you go away to the beach or go riding in the car, radio is ready, willing, and able to follow right along. You can take CBS Radio with you wherever you go this summer. Stay tuned now for Gunsmoke, which follows immediately over most of these same stations.
John Daner, our star on the Romance series in Last Summer's Love from July 9th, 1955 on CBS. I hope you enjoyed Radio Drama in this hour of Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levinger. Thanks for listening.